We put in at the beautiful island of Thrinacia. The sun was setting, and we could hear not far away the lowing of cattle and the bleating of sheep being led into their folds for the night. "I'm sorry, men, but we're not staying," I said. "This place isn't right for us." Tiresias and Circe had been so clear. The consequences of a misstep would be catastrophic. Why take the risk? There was an audible groan and a deal of muttering. Eurylochus stood up. "We all know how resolute you are, Odysseus. You seem to be able to go for days without food or sleep. You never tire. You never fade. Well, we're not all made of iron like you. Night is coming. You really want us to go back out to sea and risk shipwreck, storms or fog in the vague hope of an island that suits you better? Why can't we just stay here? We can eat and sleep on this beach and be gone in the morning." The men drummed their heels on the deck to mark their approval. "Very well," I said. "I'm outvoted. But promise me this. You come across any cows or sheep on this island, you absolutely must not lay a finger on them. Is that understood? Circe provided us with plenty of food, and we can be content with that. Agreed?"
"Aye,"
cried the men. I was annoyed with Eurylochus, but maybe he was right. Maybe I did ask too much of the crew sometimes. We cooked and ate a wonderful meal on the sand, after which we fell into mourning. We called out the names of each of the six men that Scylla had snatched. The moon rose, and we slept. But we were awoken just before dawn. A fierce storm was blowing. We had to hurry to the ship and pull it into a cave out of the way of the lashing tide. Once more, I was forced to address the men. "We can shelter in this cave and wait out the storm," I said. "Still plenty of provisions for us, but I have to tell you again, do not touch the sheep or the cattle. They are sacred to Helios. He will know, and his punishment will be terrible. Signal your acknowledgement."
"Aye."
All would have been well, had not the Skyfather and Stormbringer Zeus kept the winds howling and seas heaving for days and days. For a whole month the tempest raged. Naturally, we got through our stores, and the men were forced to go inland to look for food. Soon, most of the wild game, the birds, squirrels, and other wildlife, had been hunted down and eaten, and the men were beginning to go hungry. One morning, the sky still dark, the wind still high, and the storm showing no sign of abating, I left them and found a hilltop inland on which to pray to the gods. It was all I could think to do. I prayed and prayed until, curse it, I fell asleep. Back down at the cave, meanwhile, Eurylochus told the men that he had an idea. I awoke from my sleep with a start and ran down the hill, full of foreboding. As I got closer to the cave, those forebodings were realized. I was met by the smell of roasting flesh.
"No!" I shouted. "No, no, no! What have you done? Oh, what have you done?"
The men were sitting round in a circle, chewing on succulent cuts of meat, smiling and laughing like children.
Now, sir," Eurylochus stood in front of me. "We've thought this through."
"Thought it through? Thought it through? What are you talking about, man?"
"Before we took a single animal, we prayed to Helios, sir. We promised that we would build him a temple of his own in Ithaca when we got home. We promised him the best of our cattle in sacrifice 4 times a year. I mean, he can't complain at that, can he? A square bargain.
Oh, you damned fool! Didn't you understand?
Draw up and dig in yourself, sir. I mean, what's done is done.
You have cursed us, Eurylochus. You have cursed our voyage home.
Eurylochus grinned.
Oh, really, sir?
He pointed up at the sky, and I understood. The wind had dropped. The clouds parted, and a great ray of sunshine was cast down all around us.
Seems like Helios is sending us a sign, sir. He's accepted our bargain.
Well, Eurylochus dropped his hand on my shoulder.
You're not the only one who can think up ideas, Odysseus. And sometimes, you know, a simple one works out better than all those complicated and rather elaborate schemes you tend to come up with. With respect, sir, naturally. There was, of course, not a trace of respect in his voice. I tried not to shudder with distaste. All in all, I preferred an argumentative Eurylochus to this condescending version. But he was right in one particular. What was done was done. I sighed. Very well, then. Muster the men. Let's prepare to leave this place. I told myself that the feasting on meat had cheered them and would have strengthened their muscles. I almost reached out and helped myself to a morsel of that mouth-watering beef myself. Heaven knows it smelled tempting enough. But there was too much to do in securing the tackle, trimming the sails, and supervising the casting off. It really did seem that we should get home in good time. I was puzzled, though. Circe and Tiresias had been so clear. But perhaps Eurylochus had found the right solution. Maybe Helios truly was appeased. Oh, Odysseus, can you have been such a simpleton? We were out in the open sea, and Eurylochus was still rejoicing in his triumph. Ever seen the men so cheerful, sir?
It's true that they had set to with zest. They were singing as they pulled on the oars.
Maybe you could leave these kinds of decisions to me in future, said Eurylochus. The grand plans will always be yours, of course.
Oh, no. Oh, please, no.
Eurylochus frowned and would have replied, but then realized I was not talking to him. I was looking over his shoulder. He turned and saw a huge thunderhead, a cloud as black as coal, was almost over the ship. Before either of us had a chance to shout a single command, a bolt of lightning crashed down. The men never had a chance. The violence of the strike pitched them overboard. I looked to see how Eurylochus was reacting, but he was gone too. Somehow I found a handhold on the remains of the mast and held on. The current dragged me away, and the last I saw of my men, the brave and marvellous men who had left Ithaca with me, fought by my side at Troy, and come this far with me homeward. The last I saw of them were their desperate, upraised arms disappearing below the surface as every last one of them was pulled down to their deaths. Only I, who never touched the meat, was left above the waves. I realized with horror that the storm surge was now carrying me back towards Scylla and Charybdis. Just moments earlier, I had dared to think that the gods were finally on our side. Their full vindictive fury was plain enough now. Once again, I could not risk coming within the reach of the terrible Scylla. But I needn't have worried. The current was already pulling me inexorably towards Charybdis. As I neared the roaring whirlpool, I shinned frantically up the mast until I reached the crow's nest at the top. As the ship began to circle in the outer eddies, I hung on until another revolution brought the mast near to the cliff. When it reached its closest point, I threw myself off the mast and onto the fig tree. It swung down perilously, straining to its roots, but took my weight. I clung on and looked down. Below me, the ship began to spin round in ever tighter and faster circles as Charybdis swirled and sucked, smashing the once noble vessel into pieces. I watched as prow, sail, mast, hull, and all were drained into the heart of the whirlpool and disappeared from sight. Fiercely hugging the fig tree, I began to count. 1, 2, 3, 4. I don't know why, but the fig tree turned my mind back to the day Penelope and I had mapped out the land on which I would build our palace. She had made me promise not to fell a noble old olive tree that was in the way of my plans for our bedchamber. I solved the problem by shaping the tree's limbs into the frame of a great bed around which I constructed a room. The bed was our secret. And the thought of it, even with Charybdis thundering below me and the knowledge that all my crew were drowned, made me smile. I suppose I was smiling at the great distance there is between the warm, loving plans of mortals and the cold, vindictive plans of the gods. 58, 59, 60. I let go of the fig tree and plummeted down. At the same moment, Charybdis reversed her course and began to vomit up everything she had swallowed. I landed in a tangle of rigging and broken wood. I managed to haul myself onto a plank from the ship's decking. I kicked and kicked. I knew I had to be well clear before she turned once more and began to suck in everything around her. My lungs were close to bursting with the effort, but finally I knew I was out of range and felt able to let myself float free. For 9 days I drifted on that plank of wood until I found myself washing up on the shore of Ogygia, the island home of Calypso, who welcomed me and loved me with an imprisoning love that lasted 7 whole years. When at last I left her island, the white goddess helped me make it to your hospitable shores, where a very kind, very beautiful, and very welcoming young princess took pity on me and directed me here, to this palace. But you know this already. That is the part I began with. It is dawn now, I see. Well, my tale is told.